Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I have to tell you that my guest today, Alvaro Enrique, has written a book of a sort that I've never read before. You know, the show has been on for 30 years, so to find a book whose construction is thoroughly surprising and delightful to me is a great pleasure. This book is called Sudden Death. It's published by Riverhead Books. It's recently come out in paperback. Alvaro is a Mexican writer living now in New York.
Thank you for having me in your program, by the way.
It's a great pleasure. The book wants to look to the past for information about the present. And like an eccentric, the author of the book, who I'm not assuming is you, but the person who assembled this book, is interested in the history of tennis. Tennis going all the way back to the Renaissance. And in this particular book, Sudden Death, by my guest Alvaro Enrique, it's a duel between two great artists, Caravaggio and Francisco Quevedo, the great poet. They are playing this game, which we learn gradually is a game to the death. There's something fatal about the playing of this game. It's replaced the duel. Quevedo, the Spaniard, is told that he has to win. And there is a clash of cultures that is going back into deep history because the ball, it's an ancient tennis ball, and it's been made from the hair of the decapitated queen, the wife of Henry VIII, Anne Boleyn. Now, I don't know if it's the translator's game, but she refers to it as the Boleyn ball.
No, it's well, I had the privilege of working with Natasha Wimmer in the translation of this
book. She's an amazing translator.
Just amazing. When they told me in the publishing house that Natasha read the book and she likes it, she will do the translation, I thought, what a privilege to be in her voice in English. But then I discovered that the privilege was to see her work. I speak English well because I have lived in the U.S. for a long time. I have a thick accent, but I read and write well in English. So I was able to see her produce the final original in English, and it was amazing.
Now, what we find in Sudden Death, as this tennis game is being played, we're learning the history of tennis, the invention of the ball, which in the case of this ball is made of lard and hair and leather. It bounces erratically, demoniacally, says the translation, which is the way the book moves too, because you've freed yourself as you sit at your desk day after day to write another chapter. You freed yourself to write islands of history about Spanish poetry, about painting and Caravaggio's development from being a thug in the streets to being a heretic who uses street figures to stand in for saints and holy men, but eventually he becomes the inventor of a new sense of color.
Absolutely, and a new way of painting. I think that Caravaggio is the inventor of modern painting in the sense that for Caravaggio what matters is process and not the product. We know that now. It was not easy to research it, but we know that now that he painted from natural, that means that there is no drawing, and that he projected the images of people on the canvas and then copied them. So he did the true work of art was the performance that he could do with the beggars in his studio, which had controlled light sources. And the painting would just be, as in contemporary art, just a register of that previous performance. So he's the inventor of many things, and it is true that he was a great tennis player. That I didn't invent it, but it is true.
Why are these two in a match, the poet and painter?
Well, I don't know. The image of the figure of Caravaggio is fascinating enough. It was so easy to write about him. No? Sometimes I have the impression that all novels should be about Caravaggio. No? He was such a fascinating figure. No? This petty criminal that was at the same time the inventor of artistic celebrity, who was openly gay in a world in which we think that sexualities were constricted, but were really not. Sexualities in the 17th century were much more fluid they were as fluid as in our time and not as non-fluid as in the 19th or early 20th century.
This is a book that is defeating the Victorian novel and defeating any attempt to legislate sexuality, but to also legislate where the novel is going to go. The novel itself is like a very intelligent human mind darting from related, linked subject to subject, constantly making surprises. Now, there is no net. Explain the court.
Well, there was. After I wrote the book, I was invited to play in a royal something court in England, because
really?
the book did well in England. So I was invited by the Association of 17th Century Tennis Players of London to make a reading and game and play this game. It's closer to hockey, and they had a net, but it was retractile. You played some parts of the game with the net and some others not. So the idea of the novel, the form of the novel is that it is a novel that is similar to a tennis match, only in the sense that chapters are fast and violent and brutal and they just keep moving forward. But it's archived next to it. So the information that is there, of course the archive is intervened because it's a novel. So many sentences that are there were not said by the classical and Renaissance thinkers about tennis. But most of the are material that comes from the archive is real. And it is true that the game originally was a religious game in which the team that was attacking was the defenders of God, the devils, and the team that was resisting were the angels of God. It was a monastic game. So in the
yes.
beginning, it had this esoterical reading.
And we're told that the ball represented the soul in a battle between the angels and the figures of Satan who want to capture the soul.
All of that is there in the archives. You just, as usual, when you go to archives, you just need to open your eyes, and all these beautiful things about the past come in front of you.
I'm talking to Alvaro Enrique, and the book is Sudden Death. The book seems to begin by the invitation from the New York Public Library for the author to come and be a visiting scholar. He's given, if I remember correctly, an office. He joins other writers. And at least in this version, he's shown in this collection at the New York Public Library at 42nd Street, guarded by those famous lions. It's a place where they have all kinds of things that they don't know they have. It's where T.S. Eliot's Wasteland manuscripts showed up after no one knowing where those manuscripts that Pound worked on. And so you say they have Renaissance tennis balls?
They don't. I know you are a super perceptive reader. It's the first time someone tells me that the narrator is not myself. That is something that you would think that is obvious, no? That people would know that if someone is telling a novel, it's not him or herself who is speaking, it's a character. I was always thinking in a different narrator. So the novel has little freedoms. It's not myself, no, it's a narrator. So it's great that you are perceiving it that way, that the voice of the novelist is a fiction-oriented voice, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, Alvaro, unfortunately, most of the time, it is, in fact, the author speaking. In our contemporary American fiction, it's not just the author speaking, it's the author speaking of his own family or her own family. We've limited the novel's voyaging aspect into unknown worlds. And you see, what's thrilling about Sudden Death is that the book doesn't know where it's going, and yet it has an extraordinary sense of direction. Simultaneously, we're lost and constantly finding ourselves.
And I hope you do as a reader, because it's not a chaotic book. It's very well organized.
Yes.
And the thing is it doesn't follow the... You were saying it before. It doesn't... There is this dictum by Foucault. No, let's try to forget the 19th century. Let's make a big effort to forget the 19th century. This idea of progress, this idea of lineality, this idea of the imposition of the heteronormative system. I think that a novel must be organic and fluid as our world is. No? There is... The other day was the birthday of one of my children, and we were making a list of possible sexual orientation circumstances in the contemporary world. And we came out with 17 different ways of using your sexuality.
And we were speaking about... Least.
I think that in Facebook, I don't have Facebook, but I have here that they have like 30-something possible orientations. So the world in which we live is not a linear world anymore.
Yes.
The novel should respond, if it wants to survive as an object, as a technology that says something, must respond to that world that is flourishing and changing and in which relations are not as obvious as they were a few centuries ago.
One of the revelations in Sudden Death, and it is a sudden death, is that Caravaggio, of course, was openly gay. Quevedo is an angry poet, and Caravaggio, under the influence of enormous amounts of wine and liquor, has attempted to seduce Quevedo. Consequently, probably, this duel to the death, they've confronted one another's hypothetical sexualities, and what we have is the sexual meeting of historical people in the imaginary game of tennis.
Couldn't it be fantastic that there... It didn't happen, of course, when Quevedo finally... He had a very interesting life himself as Caravaggio. He was a spy for a time, and he was the assistant to the viceroy of Naples and Sicily that shows as a character there. So when he eventually made it to Rome and wrote a famous poem about Rome, Caravaggio was already dead. But wouldn't it have been just beautiful to have this moment in which the best poet of the 17th century in Spanish and the best Italian painter of the 17th century could have just kissed? Wouldn't it be just fantastic? I think that that's the gift of the novel. The novel, it's a genre that is under tremendous pressure by forms of art that are enriching and beautiful, as movies and TV series that are fantastic, and the news and the political sciences. So novel was invented to say things that other people are saying now, and they are saying better, but still has the privilege of occupying those blind spaces of history or of our present, and produce images that I think that can improve our lives. Imagine, carnal contact between these two geniuses. I would have clapped.
Well, it's amazing. I'm, by the way, speaking to Alvaro Enrique. You're listening to Bookworm. I'm Michael Silverblatt. We're here in the studios of KCRW. We're talking about the novel, or the structure, Sudden Death. We'll continue after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Alvaro Enrique about his fantastic construction, Sudden Death, the tale of a tennis match as ultimate power play that transcends time and involves history's most transformative and often combative figures. Now, tell me, do you think that a novelist can offer a prototype or image for broken boundaries, for torn apart walls? I think we need it.
I think that the mission of the novel is precisely that, not to question established ideas. Not from the point of view of plot, because I think that movies do that better, and not from the point of view of political thinking, because I think journalism does that better, but from the point of view of the form, the beauty of the novel as a genre is the amazing flexibility. The great gift of Miguel de Cervantes was that. He invented a form in which each novel that is a good novel is, and I am not saying that mine are, I'm speaking about true great novels here, like Bulgakov's Master and Margarita.
Oh, my God. Did you know that that's one of my favorite novels?
No, I didn't. Any reader knows that. Those masterpieces are the first book with that form, and the last one too, and is the case of El Quijote, of course, the first novel. So the novel is itself like a time bomb.
Most of us, when we think about imperialism, we think about the European conquest of the Indians of South America, but this book explores the South American conquest of Europe, and it sees that in the antiquities of the New World, what's called the New Spain, are the revelations that the Old Spain is seeking. There's artwork that is done from the plumage, the feathers of birds. And this is a reinvention of color, because as these vestments, which are made out of feathers, catch light, they're illuminated and extraordinarily frightening in their color sense, and they anticipate what Caravaggio will do with color. And so the book is suggesting that aesthetically there are precedents to art history in the ancient people, in the ancient traditions, in the discovery of figuration and color, yes?
Well, imagine Rome in the 1500s. No, commerce with China really didn't begin until Mexico City fall. No, what was between China and Europe was Mexico City. So it's until Tenochtitlan falls that the Spaniards can reach the Pacific through a very safe route, and then navigate and open the first global commerce post.
I didn't know that. So it was through Mexico.
It was through Mexico. World commerce passed through. There was this huge float of boats that went from Manila in the Philippines to Acapulco, then crossed Mexico in a very stretched part between Acapulco and Veracruz, and then the merchandise would be shipped to Europe from there. Imagine Rome in the 1500s. Pasta had not yet arrived to Italy, because that would be a Chinese invention, and tomatoes could have not still make it to Europe from Mexico.
Yes, people ate.
What the New World aported to the Old World is equal. It was really a cultural exchange.
So the book, in addition, I hadn't thought of this or had thought of it, but only it wasn't at the tip of my tongue. The book is a remapping of history and time, and a re-chronologizing of how to understand the world's history as well as art history.
A novelist doesn't have to give a statistical proof of what she says or he says. No, never. You are free of statistical proving. You can fly theories without having to prove them statistically. So the novelist has that privilege to stand up in a different place, to see different things in a different point of view. And they may work or not, but that's your everyday battle.
What I'm hearing you say is actually that there is no such thing as a novelist. Alvaro Enrique is a 17th century scholar who's written a novel. Cervantes was a soldier of empire who in jail wrote a novel called Don Quixote. There was no such thing as a novelist until the novelist was invented with the novel in the 19th century. Whose profession, Dickens, George Eliot, is to be a novelist. Before that, you had people inventing novels, inventing stories and what they are, inventing the idea that Don Quixote could have better dreams than inferior dreamers.
Is this same moment when the novelist is invented, is the same moment in which games become sports? The word sport is very young, and it's a ruled game. So soccer was something that people played with a ball in the field and was super happy playing. And then there was this moment of invention of the rules. Now everything has to be ruled, and the pitch must be 100 yards. Why? The novel must be like A, it must conduct to B, to C, to D. Why? There is no need of that. We're capable of different ways of ordering reality.
As someone who reads virtually a novel a week by a contemporary writer, not to mention the writing I want to read, say, by Thomas De Quincey, or, you know, the many, many wonderful things to be read that are not of our time, you can forget that the novel needs to be invented every time it's written, because most novels today are copies of the novel of yesterday and the day before. Whereas when I read Sudden Death, it was the sudden death of every novel that preceded Sudden Death. You know, it was a thrilling death blow to the expected.
That's incredibly generous of you to say, Michael. And I have to tell you that the form of sudden death is a very American form. It's the same. The idea of the novel is it's a novel in which The main character is not a human. The main character are objects that are rolling around the tennis pitch. And what the novel tells is their story. It tells the story of the humans that are interacting with the objects. But really, the characters and the objects, and it's a novel that has its archive. You read the novel, and as you read the novel, you see the archive that sustains that novel. And that model I took from Melville. It's Moby Dick. It's one of my favorite books. And it's tremendously chaotic, if you remember. It's a book that accompanies you for the weeks and months you take reading, because it's such a free-willing, such a crazy book.
Well, it's the great American novel. Every time I say so, I get emails from people saying I hate it. But I'm sorry, if you're really a reader, one of the tests of knowing that you're really a reader is that you love Moby Dick. You can't help it. Moby Dick is to be loved. If you've been taught it poorly, if it bored you, you read it incorrectly.
Or you didn't give yourself the chance to get gloriously bored about it, no? Because there's nothing wrong with being bored.
Thank you.
We live in an overstimulant world. There is a value in boredom, too. And I don't know, I remember childhood as my most creative and interesting period in my life, and it was very boring, too. Children are always bored. No? So I would say just let yourself be bored by Moby Dick and embrace that boredom. And little by little, Mr. Melville will begin to speak to your ear and will change your life, you know, your perspective, the rhythm. You will end up changing your iPhone for a Nokia and being happier. You will not live this fast. You will just park the car one day and be happy. Stop playing by the rules all the time. No, it's, we have the gift of freedom. Use it.
Beautiful. I've been speaking to Alvaro Enrique. He is the author of Sudden Death. It's published by Riverhead Books, recently available in paperback. It's just one of many books that are going to be translated gradually by this very exciting and surprising writer. Thank you, Alvaro, for joining me.
Thank you for having me in your legendary space. You don't have idea of how many, before coming to your program, everybody was telling me, oh God, you're going to the bookworm. So thanks very much for that included my wife, for example. So thanks very much.
Valeria Luiselli, who's been on twice and has won 2 Los Angeles Times Book Awards. You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from Sudden Death at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Gary Roth is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. 2 FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.